Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Starting your own business can be intimidating. Suddenly, you're wearing all the hats. Designer, marketer, customer support, shipping expert. It's a lot. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the global commerce platform powering millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify has your back. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, you can launch a beautiful, professional online store that looks and feels like you. Need content? Shopify's AI tools can help you write product descriptions, headlines, even enhance your product photos. Want to grow your reach? Easily create email and social media campaigns to meet your audience wherever they're scrolling. And with Shopify's world-class support, you'll have expert help for everything. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I always want people that have that internal drive to come into our programs. It's something, if you don't have it, I struggle to relate in a sense, because my personal opinion is why do it if you're not going to want to do it at a high level? And it's not for everybody. Like, playing a college sport isn't for everybody.
And our guest this week is Michelle Andre. She is the head field hockey coach at Division III Rowan University down in Glassboro. Her program, one of the best in the business. And Michelle, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thanks for having me.
So as we are recording this early October, you guys are waist deep into things here. How do you feel about the group, the direction here as you kind of pivot, I guess, for the second half of your year?
Yeah, I feel really good about this group. I felt good about them when they came in preseason. They were prepared as they came in. We hit some bumps early in September. It seems that where we're coming at now, we love playing in October. The girls call it Proftober. So the lessons that we learned early on the season from games that we lost, especially these past two games, they showed like a lot of grit and resiliency. And they've won games different ways in the past three games, which is you want teams that can adjust. So I feel really good about them. I really, really am enjoying the group. They're fun to coach and looking forward to where we're going to be at the second half of the season.
Is this the point in the year when you usually get a good feel for what your group's all about, or does that happen at a different time each year? Like, I'm sure you have a general idea, but when you really like, okay, this is what the ceiling is. Like, is it usually around now?
Usually around now, but sometimes depending on the team and the makeup of the team, sometimes I don't know who we're going to be until October. And then there's been times in the past I'm like, what would have the potential to be? I like where we're going right now. Again, just what we've done the past three games, being able to win games in very different ways. We know who we always want to be. We always want to be at the top of the NJAC and putting ourselves in a position in the NCAA tournament for a national championship run. But sometimes it's a different road to get there every year. So the past couple of years, it's been different of what there was one year, a couple of years ago, I was like, oh my gosh, we're not going to make it. And we made it. So it's just just finding the team, I guess their personality sometimes can develop late, and just constantly adjusting with them, and it's nothing's ever a hard line with me. So I'm always willing to adjust and to get better and meet them where they're at. And sometimes where I want them to be isn't where they're at right now. But the good news is where we're going at this moment, we're the team and my coaching staff, we're meeting in the middle, and it's a good mix.
As your career has gone on, has the day-to-day success become less important? And what I mean by that is, as you become a more veteran coach, is it easier to take the 30,000-foot view and say, okay, took the L today, but I like the way we fought. We played our game. It just didn't work out. Whereas maybe when you're younger, does that grate on you more? Are you better at looking at the big picture, you feel like? Or have you always been pretty good at that?
I'm definitely grown better. I'd like to think I have anyway. But there was a loss after this year that I felt like I kind of went at them, where we had a loss earlier in the season where I had a bigger perspective of what happened. And sometimes I don't have that perspective until weeks later. We had lost to a team second week of September, and I'm like, we just come off an emotional win. We lost to Hopkins, which we played fantastic, and we lost, right? Like, so you're like, and then we have an emotional letdown of a game, and it's like, perspective later is like, yeah, they were just better than us that day. Or you have a game a week later where we were better than a team and still lost, but we didn't take care of it. When I was younger, I think it would grate on me and not appreciate some of the small wins that happened in the game. And I think that's really important, that like, what pieces of the game can you win and not just the big picture of, all right, the wins and loss at the end of the game is like, oh, we did this really, really well. Let's build on that. And, you know, focusing on not what we're just doing well, not just what we're doing wrong as we plan practice. Like, what are the things we're doing well and how can we encourage that behavior as well?
With the sport of field hockey, one that I'm not overly familiar with, what is the hardest aspect of it to get to come together? Is it off the field? Is it a certain X and O situation? Like, is there one thing that is the hardest lock to pick when it comes to having overall success?
I think in the game of field hockey, you're going to see there is an X and O element, but you got to have athletes that can do the X's and O's. And, you know, I've been in a couple different programs where I wasn't able to get to those X's and O's real fast because I had to concentrate on fundamentals, which is certain receptions or certain hit or defense, where, you know, when you have a bit of a team that's a little bit more elite, like, you can get into like what your press look like, right? You're not teaching the basics on a daily level. You are honing in on the fundamentals, but you're not having to do those things. So there's a component of that that happens. You know, there's a component of off the field and on the field. And also now in the game of field hockey, because the game has moved from like a slow pace, we've gone from two halves of 35-minute halves to four quarters of 15 minutes, the game's a sprint. So recognizing that you're running a deeper bench and being okay with that, which is a little bit outside of my comfort zone, like subbing a little bit more frequently on the fly than I used to. And, you know, there's a component of like what's our set pieces as well. Like, we have defensive corners and offensive corners, like being able to execute and being in the right spot at the right time. And with the game of field hockey, it's making the best decision with the information available, like put the pass out. Like, and sometimes my players will come to me and is like, well, what should I have done there? I was like, well, what do you think you should have done there? Because four answers can be true. Like, they could have done four things right. But sometimes with them, I think a lot of times with these young student athletes, they want to be right, and sometimes they just have to make a decision. So I would say that's probably the piece of getting them to like be okay with their decision-making process and go at it wholeheartedly. And if there's a major – like, if it's not right, then – but I think that would be where this team is at, is just do it. Like, you're trained to do those things. Go ahead and make those decisions.
The switch from two halves to four quarters, how long has that been in place?
I believe it happened in 21.
Okay.
So it was right after COVID, or was it 19? It all blurs together.
Time's a flat circle.
I know. It's just, it really is. So it was happening at the international level, at the Olympics and the FIH and at the World Cup and everything. Part of it was TV friendly. So the game went from 70 minutes to 60 minutes, but we stopped the clock on corners. So the game is essentially the same amount of time. And I've liked the switch. At first, I wasn't sure if I was going to like the switch. But for me, the game is just so fast paced. Like, it is, you don't stop. Like, there's really, like, you have to be able to go. And with the rules of our game, with our self-start, like, the game can just, it just takes a life of its own. It's very high paced. There's a lot of shooting. It really, if you haven't watched field hockey, it's, especially at the higher levels, it is a fun game. It's a great game to watch because there is a lot of action.
So was the move really TV media driven?
I believe so. I think it had a lot to do with the Olympics and World Cup at the world stage. And, you know, part of that as well, as we've gone into, you're seeing it a lot in Division I. You see it all in the FIH, but all in Division I, it's now trickling down to Division III. You're getting video review now. So it still keeps the game kind of true to itself. But if you were to do video review probably within the 35-minute quarters, and that's, we used to have a timeout at the college level. We don't get timeouts anymore. So it's 15 minutes, 2 minutes in between corners, 10 minutes in between half. And if the school right now in Division III is capable of video review, you get video review. Like, you have to talk about it with video review. But we're trending in that direction. I like it. I think one of the things that I've prided myself on as a coach is being able to evolve with what is happening in front of me. Like, you know, and I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'm willing to see what else is out there and not just what is out there, but what my players are seeing. So if they like something, I'm like, all right, well, we're going to keep doing that. But I do like the game at this. I like the game is where the game is at right now.
So now let's talk about the road that got you to Rowan. You were a pretty elite athlete. Were you playing, like, growing up as a kid, were you playing everything?
Yeah, I was actually I played softball. Softball was my first one that I played younger, when I was younger. And then I got into rec soccer. And back then it was just boys soccer. So I was one of three females on the team. And then I got into middle school and I wanted to go out for soccer, but they said we only have boys soccer. So then I went out for field hockey and I started playing field hockey in sixth grade. I played basketball and softball as well. I played that all through high school and into college was field hockey and softball. And then good old NCAA with your 10 full-time semesters. My fifth year, I played lacrosse. I was a goalkeeper for lacrosse. So really maximize the eligibility. Why grow up? So, yes, I had a great experience. I was very lucky I got to do that. You know, I had some Division I looks for field hockey. And, you know, when some things, like, I thought I was going to go one place and then I went on a visit to Rowan. I was like, I knew that's where I wanted to be. And I was able to be more impactful at a place like Rowan than I might have gotten lost in the weeds at Division I.
And you grew up in Pensauken?
Grew up in Pensauken.
So went along growing up as you're playing all these sports and, you know, you start to get attention for field hockey. When do you start to think you're good? Like, when do you start to think, like, all right, I feel like I can take this somewhere?
I don't ever felt like I wasn't good. I've never felt that way in field hockey. And even in softball and basketball, I thought I was, but I also worked. I had the work ethic to do those extra things, like hitting the ball in the field. Like I like playing sports. So I think my freshman year in high school, I was the only freshman playing varsity in all three sports. Like, I was one of the first letter winners out of Pensauken to really play all my 4 years, all four sports. Like, you know, I thought I was a really good athlete. I wanted to be the guy at a really young age. And, you know, I thought that, and I, even when I was looking at college, I was like, oh, I'm going to play field hockey and softball. And, you know, you bring that up to a Division I coach, they, you know, even back then, like, it's, but I'm glad I was able to do that at Rowan. But I also had great support with my high school coaches along the way that helped me, you know, they did spend that extra time with me. You know, I remember in basketball, like the freshman coach, he worked on my jump shot. I wanted to have a great 3-point jump shot. So he worked with fixing my arm. Or in softball and travel softball, like, I wanted to hit a certain way. Like, I worked on my hit. Like, I worked on my shot. I put the time in. And I didn't know how good I could be. And sometimes I wish I could go back to my younger self and say, hey, you probably could have did a little bit more. And we just didn't have the information. If we had the information that we had now, I probably, like, you can go teach yourself on YouTube. Like, I was going to work camps in college and I was working with coaches in college. Like, that's how I got my shot really good, working summer camp, or I worked on my lift or my penalty stroke. Like, I had people, I was playing at camps. Like, at the international camp, some of the people coming over from England and Scotland, we were playing pickup with them at night. And I think around probably my sophomore year of college is when I really started to feel like I was maybe towards the end of my I thought I could be really good. I wanted to be the person. I wanted to be the best person on the field, but I also wanted to win a championship. So, yeah, it was kind of always ingrained in me. I just loved playing sports. I knew I was athletic and I knew I was good, but I wish I could have been better.
So you talked about the decision to come to Rowan. When you take the jump from high school to college, big, or did it make sense? Like it was just the next step?
For me, it was big. I was not prepared.
Mentally or physically or both?
Both. I had the field hockey skill. I didn't – like that first preseason, I struggled my first couple days. And by halfway through the season, I figured it out. Like I got myself in shape. But I learned a really hard lesson that year. But I also think it's a lesson that even in coaching, I think – and again, it's just so different because you didn't have the network. Like you had the old phone chain where you call somebody's house phone. Like these kids that nowadays they're connected through – clubs, Instagram, like they seek each other out. So when they're trying to help with a preseason packet, like they have a built-in support system that at the time we were kind of on our own. I just didn't know. I didn't know what it was going to be like. I was the first person in my family to go to college. I was the first person to play sports. And even at the high school level, like I was one of the first field hockey players to go besides, I just didn't know. Like I was not physically prepared. Now, softball season, I was great. Like, coming off of field hockey shape, I was one of the best in shape freshmen for softball. But it took me a little bit to get my legs under me, and I did. I struggled a little bit. But I do think that piece of me, I do have empathy for people that are new coming into our program, that to give them that grace to, like, sometimes they might falter because it's just new. And depending on their experience, they struggle with it, where I don't – unless something I know is going on in their life, like, you know, if you've been in the program, like, you should know. Like, I was smart enough to know. I was like, oh, that's never going to happen again. And that was the summer I went and was working camps. I was working out. Like, I was playing more. And I learned that lesson. But I do think that there's the game from club and high school to the college game, one of the significant differences is the speed of the game. And the speed of the game was totally different when I was playing, but it was still faster. It was just a different – but even now, I think some of the biggest adjustment from high school club to college is the pace of a field hockey game. So I sometimes – freshmen just aren't ready for that.
Do you think if you grew up now, same circumstances and everything, you would have played as many different sports? Or do you think you would have either decided to or been funneled into one sport just because that – seems like how it works now. Like if you show any kind of app, not any kind, but if you show that you have elite potential or, you know, the potential to go to college, the forces will almost combine to make sure that we take that as far as they can go.
Yeah, I think I'm not so sure which sport I would have been. I don't know if I would have been funneled into basketball. I wasn't a bad basketball player. I felt like I was a smart basketball player. Field hockey probably would have funneled me in because even when I was going to camp starting my freshman year, I was getting invites to what used to be Futures for USA Field Hockey, which is now called Nexus. And, you know, at the time, like we had to make decisions. Like financially, my family, you know, and physically, we couldn't make it happen. So I was choosing to go to team camp in the summer, and Futures, I couldn't make, like, yeah, I kept, or I had college coaches at these camps when I was in high school saying, hey, you should do this, this, and this. And that's where you first got noticed by college coaches was in camps back then. So I probably would have got funneled to field hockey. I don't know if I would have got funneled to field hockey when I was in sixth grade. I'm not sure. But I was playing softball and travel softball way more than I was playing field hockey at the time. I just, you know, there was just something about field hockey that I just loved. And I love softball. I was very good at softball. But I'm not sure which one I would have been. Maybe because the exposure of softball and there was more travel softball.
But do you think it was probably more likely you would have ended up on one track, regardless of which one?
I don't think so. No, I don't know. It seems like now that we push these kids to do it like all or nothing, and there's got to be some grace. Like if they have other interests, especially when they're developing, like let them go have other interests, let them explore other things. Because I think you don't. Sometimes we train too much on that one piece sometimes to have another experience or another coaching experience, or not just a like I would like to think I would still have been playing multiple sports. I would have been playing multiple sports in high school. That's for sure, because that's just the type of person that I was. But as far as it probably would have been club field hockey. I probably would have chose field hockey if it was presented to me by softball, like if what travel I was going to play. But softball was back differently. You had your town, you had your all-star, and then you got your travel. But then ASA was coming along when I was playing. So I was playing on like five different softball teams in the summer, where field hockey I was playing with my high school team in a summer league once a week and then going to team camp for a week. So, yeah, I'd like to think that I would have played multiple sports, but I could see myself being funneled into field hockey, not early age, but as soon as I hit my stride going into high school.
How much did the skill sets of playing softball, of playing basketball, like how did that help make you a better field hockey player? Do you feel like it how, and I'm talking purely from like a skill set, mm-hmm. and I would doubt as a 15-year-old you're thinking, oh, wow, what we did in basketball really helped me. But as you look back, did that variety help make you a better field hockey player?
Oh, yeah, because there was things that I could translate into, like, just as simple of, like, keeping in basketball, like, seeing your mark, like, seeing when you're playing man-to-man, like, you can never turn to a side or forcing to a side. Honestly, the drop stepping, like, or learning, you know, in basketball, and you can't do this in field hockey, but you can kind of do this in field hockey, like learning how to run off in if you're on an attacking circle, like, let me run my defender into another defender, which is what we know in basketball is a screen or a pick, which are illegal in field hockey. But just those movements alone are just recognizing, like, if I went to field a ball at third base in softball, my body's behind the ball. When I'm receiving a ball, like, I need to get my feet and my stick in the same, like, I need to go with my body. So it's all connected. And, you know, in basketball, I was seeing here, field hockey, I'm seeing here, but softball helped with my hand-eye coordination. You know, probably one of the reasons why I have such good hand-eye coordination with a field hockey stick is from doing fungos for softball, like bunting or being able to put the ball where I need to put the ball. So, yes, looking back on it, I think I became a very well-rounded athlete. I felt that in college. I felt like a pretty well-rounded athlete in college, but I did not think – you're right. Nobody's thinking about that at that age. You're just thinking, it's like, I want to win. I want to be good. And I got to go to school at some point.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Michelle Andre in just a few moments. But right now, want to remind you that this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Michelle Andre. She is the head field hockey coach at Division III Rowan University in Glassboro, New Jersey.
Being a hard worker from an athletic standpoint, how does that translate to being a coach? And what I mean by that is, do you find that it gives you high expectations across the board? Do you get more frustrated, you think, than maybe some other coaches because you know the work that goes in and you can tell when somebody's not putting it in? Like, how does specifically that work ethic that drove you as an athlete, how do you funnel that as a coach to expectations and how you look at what your athletes are doing?
Well, the one thing I've learned is, you know, I can't give somebody work ethic. Because I say to the players, it's something that's expected when you get here. And somebody's 100% could look different than somebody else's 100%. So I'm very aware of that. What I do struggle with being a coach and being that type of player that I was, is like, if you're not doing – you can't say, well, I don't know what's happening when you haven't done – I don't know why my shot isn't working. Well, you can't keep saying, I don't understand, when you haven't gone out 40 minutes early to work on that. So that for me is something that I, you know, if you're like, I was a striker on corners and I took penalty shots, penalty strokes. I worked on it like 2 to 3 days on my own because, again, I wanted to be the guy. Like, I wanted to be the person walking up to take a penalty stroke without the coach saying, hey, Michelle, we want you to take, I was taking it. I wanted the offensive corners to come through me. So that piece that was ingrained, that was something that's ingrained in me, that sometimes I feel like I have to nudge my players along. And they're, listen, they do great. Like they've done those things. But sometimes I have to give a nudge. I think in my younger years, and I was just telling a couple of my players this the other day in the team house hallway. They're like, do you ever miss? Sometimes you get frustrated, like because you know you can do it. I said, I don't get frustrated. When I was younger and I could still play at a high level, and even into my like early 40s, I was still playing pretty competitively. I don't feel that way now because, yeah, my body's just not cooperating. But there are things that I can still physically do. But when I was, it would be frustrating that I could physically do something and my players, I could see them and they couldn't do it. And that was hard for me, especially as a younger coach, because I knew I was like able to do those things. And I'm like, how can you not do those things? And I was talking with them. We were joking around about it. And I was like, I don't feel that way anymore. I feel a certain – I've always – and I talk about with the former Rowan coach. She's like, you know, they stay the same age and we get older and smarter, you know, and we expect them to know the same things that we know. And I think being able to give them that grace to get to where we are, I think sometimes we think – because we've been been doing this for – over 25 years, and I have to remember they're still 18 to 22-year-olds. They're always going to be 18 to 22-year-olds. So, you know, we've been watching a lot of these kids since they were like maybe a freshman or sophomore year in high school. So there's – and we do our due diligence, whether it's talking to the club coach or their high school coach. It's like I know what their work ethic is, or I know what they're capable of before they get to us. So I don't really question that from my teams. Like, I mean, just even the past couple games, like – the resiliency of that, it's expected when you come into our program. So I think going back to your question, that ingrained, that personal work ethic is something that I can't give to a player. I can help nudge them along because sometimes they don't always know their potential. Some people aren't just going to go pick up a ball and stick without their coach. That's just not. But what can happen now is I can help nudge that along and – you know, where my work ethic is, like I explained, like I'm willing to meet there where they're at. But if they're not going to give me the best of themselves that day, and it might look different every day, I'm like, I don't know if I – because I'm giving you the best of myself. And for the most part, yes, you have to worry about yourself. I'm trying to worry about like 30 girls to make sure that we can get the team going along. So I always want people that have that internal drive to come into our programs. It's something – if you don't have it, I struggle to relate in a sense, because my personal opinion is why do it if you're not going to want to do it at a high level? And it's not for everybody. Like playing a college sport isn't for everybody. Doing what we do is not for everybody. It's hard to maintain success. I've learned that like day in and day out. It is you constantly got to be on your A game, and you know that can be exhausting at time and exhilarating at time, but you know, that's the internal drive that I have. And that's something I harp on to my players about having that, like, if this is your choosing, you get to do this. And they are embracing it right now.
You kind of led me. I had a question and then you kind of led me into a deeper meaning of that. You talked about how you wanted to be the guy, like, give it to me. I want the pressure. I want. And I would imagine that's like in your marrow. So when you're looking for players, that is high on the list of boxes you want checked in recruits. Mm-hmm. Can it be a double-edged sword? What I mean by that is, do you want everybody to want that? Because everybody can't be the guy. Some people have to play different roles and stuff like that. But if they are wired to want that, on one hand, you love the competitiveness because it probably drives them. But could it also lead to frustration that they're not getting what they need?
That's a good question, because yes, that can happen. We are looking for people that can be impact players. And you know, and sometimes like where they were and when they come to us, like their job is to be a role player. And I know they might have been used to being that person where they came from, but like you said, not everybody gets to be that person. Like we were saying in the beginning of our season, I got over 20 girls that deserve to start. I can't start 20 girls. I mean, depending on the situation, sometimes I'm playing 20, sometimes I'm playing 16. Like, I think the most I played this year was 22. It's just when you come into our program like ours, like not everybody gets to be the center forward. Not everybody gets to be that person that strikes on corners. But know your role and do your job. And, you know, that team success is what we're looking for. And it's nothing's wrong with wanting that individual success. I embrace that. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to be an All-American or be All-Conference or be Player of the Year. But not at the expense of what the team goals are. Because if you get those things, that means we're probably meeting our team goals. So there is that balance, and getting our players. Like, I think we have a really good culture. I think we have some really good foundational things in our program, and a lot of years of tradition. That doesn't happen. I can honestly say that hasn't really much happened to me at Rowan, which is great, because that means the team understands what needs to happen. But you do have to have players with edge. I'd rather rein you in than try to bring it out of you. So I embrace sometimes those people that might, you know, push boundaries a little bit. I'm willing to roll the dice with that. I think it's great. Like, I think it's great to have that edge, because, and you wanting to be that person, even though you might not result, that means you have that drive, and you want to be good, and you want to be on the field. So even if you aren't the guy and not taking that game-winning shootout, like, you're one of the reasons why we're in that shootout.
So you had a ton of success as a player at Rowan in both field hockey and softball. I mean, team success and what, you were Offensive Player of the Year in Division III 1 year?
From the South Jersey Club, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you did a lot. What are your favorite memories of playing in college? Are they wins, moments, or are they more the relationships, the bus rides, the stuff like that, or is it a mixture?
Oh, it's a mixture. We weren't always on buses. We were on vans back then, so that was fun. You know, the safety of 15 people in a 15-passenger van. You know, I have, like, one of my assistants on my staff was my college teammate and roommate. We played field hockey and softball together. One of my college teammates was my sister. So there is having those shared experiences and, you know, those long-term relationships. I wouldn't have that relationship with this person on my staff right now if it wasn't for college. But, you know, some of those memories have been created from a lot of success. Right. So, yes, you've had all the, like, for Florida, like when we used to go to Florida for softball, like we were down there playing in Rebel Spring games back then. Like, yeah, there was a lot of great memories, and it's fun to win. Like, we were very back in the softball. Like, I mean, maybe we were losing like 3 or 4 games a season. Like, we weren't losing in softball. And field hockey, when I came in, like, we had lost a big senior class. It was a little bit different. And then we had that resurgence towards the end of my playing career, getting back into the NCAA tournament, you know. Doing things for the first time, like my junior year, I was just telling this story last night. You know, we beat TCNJ for the first time in Rowan's program history when I was a junior. Like, you know, getting to experience some of the firsts at Rowan. You know, we were batting champions in '96. Like, those things were fun, but also those relationships were a result of those things. So I do have fond memories of certain games, certain performances, individual and team performances. But I'm also, you know, I remember like the NCAA tournament for, like, when we had team breakfast, like, for softball, like I said, going down to Florida, when we went up to my freshman year, when we went up to Ithaca, and then one of my teammates hit a home run and we went to the World Series. Like, those are those relationships. And I still see and hear from people today. Like, it's, I wouldn't have some people in my life, and I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if it wasn't for that foundation and those experiences. So I'm really, really grateful for all of that, because I'm really happy with where I'm at right now. But those relationships were important, because no matter what, you can't be successful without the next person next to you, and you need those people.
You referenced this, and I wanted to ask you about this, but you have all the success, field hockey, softball, and then your last semester. Oh, by the way, lacrosse looks fun. I'll go out, and you were like second team as the goalie. Like, you were like really good.
Play third base.
But, well, that's the thing. Like, that's freakish. Like, because you didn't. It sounds like, talking to you, like, lacrosse was not a box you checked until you decided to play at the college level and you thrive at goalie. Like, did that surprise you? Were you surprised that, like, well, I've never played this sport, and yet I'm good at it? Like, as someone who couldn't play a sport in college, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was fun. I had a lot of fun, and I knew better, right? So that year, I was a student assistant for field hockey, and Mary Marino and Penny Kemp were the field hockey coaches and lacrosse coaches at the time. So I was coaching with them, and then I became the student athlete again. And I just, you know, they say coaching makes you smarter. It absolutely makes you smarter. But I was originally, when I was going to go out for it, I was that fall, I was practicing because I thought they were going to, I was going to get put on attack because they're like, yeah, Michelle don't care. She'll run through anybody and she'll score. Well, then a goalkeeping situation changed and they asked me to be a goalie. So I started getting trained in a goalie. I was trained as a goalie within like 2 months. And yeah, I just – and the one goalie got pulled. They put me in and I didn't come back out.
Were there – I mean, rules of the game, like the things that you, that become kind of reflexive as you play a game throughout your career, like you just kind of hit the – ground running. I mean, we all understand the general idea of lacrosse, but like, were there situations where you had to look at a teammate and you're like, all right, so what can I do here? What can I do here? Or why am I not allowed to do that? Anything
no,
like that?
No, because lacrosse 8 meter play is a lot like basketball. So it was like forcing, like if I knew my team, I knew where high end shots were going to come from. I was also a very aggressive goalie. So I was looking to pick balls off back then, ground balls that were on the ground. I came out. Throwing was easy to pick up for me because, again, it was like, all right, readjusting my arm from softball to that. I didn't always have the cleanest stick is like what you see at the lacrosse level now where these people make this save and it's boom, scoop right up and the boom. That wasn't me because I just didn't know better, but I knew how to move my stick just like a softball glove. So that's kind of body behind ball, make the save. And if my defense was like, we're going to force you, we're going to double. I had a really good defense in front of me too, so they forced a lot of bad shots. But I was kind of like I understood it very quickly because I used to go watch lacrosse at Rowan because back in the day, like a lot of my friends were playing field hockey and lacrosse. So I would go watch lacrosse. It was kind of an easy transition for me to learn the game defensively and offensively to the point where like when I got done college, I was doing an assistant coaching at lacrosse. And then a little bit later, I was officiating some lacrosse when I was up at Rochester. So, yeah, I had so much fun and I just knew better. And I also knew coming off being a student assistant in 98 when the team went to the Final Four for field hockey for the first time, I was just hungry. I was like, I want that one last time. So I just embraced it.
Were there your coaches and teammates like impressed? How are you doing this? I've played this my whole life and you're at the same level I am and you got here Tuesday. Like, you know, or was it just, hey, you're helping us win? And
I think it was a little bit, but well, they all knew me, right? Like they all had known me. My coaches sometimes were like, I can't believe you're doing it. Like how, like, but they would also call, like sometimes I made bonehead plays and my teammates and my coaches called me on it. Like sometimes I messed up. Yes, they were grateful because I was athletic enough to figure it out. But they also knew – they knew me. So I don't think anybody was surprised. But sometimes they would be like, I can't believe that you just finished lacrosse season and you were a second-team all-region for your first time playing. I was like, yeah, I kind of – yeah. Okay, that's a bonus. I didn't even – and I just wanted to win. Like I wanted – I was like, this is my last chance for a national championship run. I wanted to win. So that was the crux of me. And I got to play sport one more time. Like, oh, should I have been working? Probably. But you know what? I get to work the rest of my life. I'm going to do this.
Kind of to that point, you talk about how you were, you know, helping coach, starting to coach as your college is winding down. Like, was coaching always something that you thought you would pursue, whether it be something on the side or for a career, you know, or was it something that crystallized once your college playing days are over and you've gotten a taste of it? Let me see where this can take me.
I was a math major. I had no desire. I thought I was going to go make a lot of money somewhere or perhaps like apply to the Air Force looking at, you know, finding ways to – I loved like complex problems, aeronautics, all that stuff like that. Yeah, I coached that year and I was like, I'm actually kind of good at this. And then I pursued grad school at Rowan in higher ed administration and, you know, finished up my GA, finished up my degree at Rowan and went and got a head coaching job at the University of Rochester and the rest is history. Like, but no, I did not go out seeking coaching. I thought I wanted no parts of education. I did not want to teach. I thought I could have a lot of movement with my math degree. And I have a math degree. Like, it's amazing. But I wouldn't change a day. Like, I'm glad I did that because, you know, I also, as I went into my master's program, I'm like, all right, well, if coaching doesn't work out, like, I'm going to have a master's. Maybe I could teach at a junior college. Like, I was trying to give myself choices, right? Like, so I kind of started talking about that a little bit more and more with myself and other people around me. And, you know, I was just very lucky. I had really great mentors and they took care of me. They helped guide me and they gave me the confidence to go out and be a head coach. So I just never thought until that year that I was like, oh, I actually like this. I'm good at it. All right. Sure.
Was there a conscientious decision to pursue field hockey coaching, or is there a parallel earth where you're maybe a softball coach instead of field hockey? Or did you start to, once you kind of got a taste of it?
Yeah. So I was, as I was starting to apply for jobs, still at the time, a lot of jobs were field hockey lacrosse. So I was applying for jobs for field hockey lacrosse head coach. And then the Rochester job was just a field hockey coach. And, you know, there was a little concern back then. It's like, am I pigeonholing myself into one? But fun fact, I did coach softball up at Rochester. I was an intern as they were making some changes along their administrative staff, and the softball coach went into an administrative role, and they needed a softball coach. I was like, okay. But at the time, they thought I was going to do lacrosse because the lacrosse coach had changed, the softball coach had changed, and they weren't sure which one I was going to do until they filled it. So that was, yeah. So I did have had that. And on top of that, like when I was at Stockton, as lacrosse was getting ready to start there, I coached the club lacrosse team one spring. But I don't know if you're going to find a lot of people that can do that anymore in the world that we're in.
I think it probably goes along with athletes are funneled in one direction.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I think coaches are becoming funneled in direction too, you know, because it's your sport all the time. And I think that's one of the great things I love about Division III is I always say you get to be great at a lot of things. Like I get to dabble. Even now professionally, like I like being able to do other things.
We need to take another break. We will get back to our conversation with Michel Andre in just a few moments. But once again, want to remind you that this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HRV. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Rowan University head field hockey coach Michel Andre.
So you started Rochester as a head coach. Did you know what you didn't know as far as there's a lot of things that come across the desk of a head coach that have nothing to do with your game on Friday night? Was that cold water over you? Like, okay. Or did your experience help prepare you?
That was I felt like I knew how to navigate the field hockey athletic piece, budgets and all that stuff pretty well. I had my hands on a lot of things. I had a collateral responsibility at Rochester. I was running the fitness center. So I was responsible for staffing, equipment. So I had to learn that and tried to learn that as best as I could, as fast as I could. And I can tell you right now, it was very overwhelming. It's like you're asking me to run this whole building with student workers, training staff. Like I'm responsible for equipment. I'm responsible for equipment in the varsity weight room to purchase. Like, it's like, whoa. So, you know, and we also had game management duties, which, again, I was doing that at Rowan anyway. So I knew how to navigate. And again, I had great mentors with that. I knew how to navigate the athletic field as far as the day-to-day ops. But that other piece I learned on the fly, and I felt like I got very good at it. I feel very knowledgeable about that, like that part now. My first year, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, as far as Even with coaching, like because I had a team when I first took over, my team was like a 13, 14 players. Like at one point, I remember one game, like my goalie was down with the flu and we were on the road and I had to have a field player be a goalie. Like there was just so many different challenges that I had to do. And, you know, that was back in the day. Like how do I simulate practice? So there's a lot of stuff I did in with them. There's things I focused on the small game and stuff like that, but I do think sometimes if we lost a game, I should have been a better coach in how I handled it. But I was young, I was hungry, I'm still hungry, but it was a different young and hungry, and sometimes I couldn't see beyond the wins and losses. But I did, because I really embraced that team, and they had their first winning season and we went to the playoffs. But I think there are some things that, knowing what I know now, as I would take the field as a coach in a first, like I would be better. I would be better, right? Because again, you get older, you get more knowledgeable, you don't know what you don't know. And it was a different time back then. Like there was things that you could, I know it was 2002, but you know, you still didn't have the influx of any social media. Like, so they were very engaged, very academic oriented. And, you know, I was learning how to be a head coach as well.
So you're at Rochester and then you come back to Rowan as an assistant before you go to Stockton. Am I correct?
Correct.
Was it hard going from a head coach to an assistant? And I don't even mean this from an ego standpoint, but, you know, 5 years of doing things your way, running your program. And then was it hard to not, like, reflexively, not implement, but, like, say things or and not because you're trying to throw your weight around. It's just because you were the final voice for 5 years and now you're not quite the final voice. Was that difficult at all?
I had moments. Oh, yeah. I had moments that it was difficult because sometimes I'm like, I was so passionate about how something should happen. And then, you know, and again, I have a great relationship with Penny. Like, she's the captain. Like, it's her say. Like, regardless that, like, if I want to be the captain, then I need to go get my own ship again. You know, but, you know, there was a different perspective that I brought. I always felt that I was a really good assistant. I was really good at, like, backdooring a lot of things. Like, you know, if somebody was struggling with how's, you know, because the head coach is, like, big picture. So it's like, I would go up to a player and be like, hey, do you understand what she's saying? Like, I was really good at that kind of stuff. But there was moments that I'm like, oh, man, I would do it this way. But it's not my team. It's ultimately her. She's the head coach. She's the final say. But I learned how to be very collaborative because of her. I never felt like my voice didn't matter. I was never that person's like, oh, she's not listening. Like, nothing ever happened in – There was always a thoughtful process behind everything that she did, and I know I take and I do that as well.
Game day. What impact do you feel you have as a head coach? How much do you move the needle on game day as opposed to on practice? Like, it's interesting to me because I asked this question of different sports, and for some sports, they feel like they earn their money, so to speak, during practice. And games, there's only so many pieces you can move. For other sports, they feel it's the opposite. Where do you think for field hockey, you know, is your main impact game day or is it practice?
I think it's practice, but I think I can have decisions in games that can move the needle. Like our last night game, like, you know, I made a decision to pull the goalie with 2.5 minutes left. And it's like that was impactful. Or I was like making adjustments on a corner play. Thank God the corner play was right in front of me. I was making adjustments on the fly. And I'm glad I did that because it resulted in a goal. So, yes, there are things that are impactful in field hockey. But I can tell you right now, like, you can only make so many adjustments in a game. Like, most of the time, our biggest adjustments are going from the second to the third quarter because we have the halftime. And that's when I think our most impactful is, or if we have to pull a player off. But the whole point, in especially in field hockey practice, because the game is constantly in motion, you're going to turn the ball over. It's like repping them in that so they can be prepared for failure and how to manage failure in practice. Like, you know, you have to have failure in order to manage it and make good your decision-making process. Like I said to you in the beginning, like, you have to be able to make the best decision with what you know, because four things could be right. Like, you just have to make the decision. So I think that piece of practice is the most important for us. And even our set pieces, like when we scout other teams, like, we might be practicing against their defense on offensive defensive corners. Like, that's when we're doing most of our, like, all right, this is what it should look like. All right, that's going to be open. That's not going to be open. Or, you know, if on the defensive corner units, like, that shot keeps getting off, like, how do we stop that shot? So that is probably where we are the most impactful. But I can tell you, as a coach, I can have an impactful decision. Sometimes it's a guess. Like, you know, is this a subbing at the right time? Should I pull the goalie? I can tell you, about a month ago, I pulled the goalie and I think I made a mistake too soon. I learned from that and I was able to do that in this game. So, you know, there is a learning curve with stuff as well for a coach. And I told the team that last night, that it can make or break in what can happen in a game. But, you know, as far as game day, it's kind of on, it's a lot of it on them. Like, we can take 30 shots and only score one goal. I can't shoot for them. Like, I can only try to get them in the right spots. That's why we always say you got to do your job. Like, where do you need to be and do your job? Because if you're getting the right spot, that's half the battle, which has to happen in practice.
So we mentioned Rochester, assistant at Rowan. Then you go to Stockton for a few years before you come back to Rowan. When you're at Stockton, weird to play against Rowan because you're conference foes. Like, was it like you transported to Earth too? Like,
well, it was interesting because Stockton was still a fairly new program and they hadn't had any success. So, you know, the first year going in there, I had – the kids were ready for a change, and I enjoyed them. Like, I still keep in touch with some of them today. You know, but they – we tried to maximize what they could do, and I was all about little wins. But I knew a lot of what I had to do there had to be off the field, which was recruiting. I did not enjoy playing Rowan. I know Penny did not enjoy playing me. It was, and I actually think that's probably where there was a Stockton-Rowan rivalry born a little bit, which continues today. But yeah, I know we both did not enjoy it, and we always just left it on the field.
So you do come back to Rowan 2015. How does that come together? I mean, obviously, I would imagine it was probably on the list of things that you'd like to do.
Yeah, it was kind of my dream job.
Is it a conversation that leads to how does it come together?
Well, I knew when it was going to open, I was going to pursue it. Penny was doing she was an associate AD and plus the head field hockey coach, and she was getting out of coaching. So that left the door open for a head field hockey position. And I knew, like, let's be honest, like, alma mater, I've had been out of the head coach, like, I wanted the job. But I also didn't want to be given the job. So I went out to go win the job. I did interview prep. I had a booklet made. Like, I was doing booklet. Like, I made sure that I was prepared because I wanted no doubt that this is something that I wanted. And I didn't want to be left any note. Like, I want this job and I'm going to win this job. So that's kind of how it came to be. I prepared just like I prepared for. I didn't take anything for granted. You never know how somebody's brain's going to think and as a final decision maker, and I didn't want to leave anything to doubt. So that's kind of how it happened. I knew it was going to open. I was like, I want that job. Because I also wanted the connection back with the alumni. Like, I wanted to – because the people that I've met along the way, like when I was coaching, like there's so many generations of players out there that come back to get – like, and I love being kind of that bridge with a lot of it. So I wanted to be back here for that.
Did you feel – more pressure because it was your alma mater when you take over? Like, I can tell by the way you're wired, you're never thinking, oh, what if this doesn't work out? But, like, you know, it's different than if you're taking over at Stockton or if you're taking over at Rochester. I mean, regardless of where the state of where the programs are, it's your place. You've got, you know, you're in the Wall of Fame. Like, it's different. Did you feel any extra pressure, or was it just, this is what I want to do and we're going to do it?
Oh, there's a lot of self-imposed pressure. And I had people... numerous people tell me to knock it off. But I, like, when I took over Rochester and Stockton, I knew I was building something. And I wanted to leave those programs in a really good place, better than I found it. It was just different. Like, they hadn't had the success that Rowan had. You got to remember, like, Rowan has had Final Four success, won the NJAC, won a national championship, and I'm coming back to take over this program, and I felt it. Like, I want to bring in a national championship back to Rowan. It's on my bucket list. It's probably the only thing – I feel like it's the only thing I haven't accomplished is a national championship. I've done so many other things that if my career were to end, even if I don't have the national championship, I would feel at peace, but I want it. So I had that self-imposed pressure. And the program was in a good spot, right? Like, I didn't have to rebuild a program. It just had to, like – you know, there were some things that needed to be fine-tuned again because where Penny was doing two jobs, getting pulled different directions. But, you know, and it's when that first year we just missed the NCAA tournament, we had a loss in the beginning of the year that came back to haunt us. That team should have went to the NCAA tournament my first year. And they performed. They were great. Like, and I'm like, oh, I had a really good freshman class that year. So there was definitely some self-imposed pressure for me, you know, and it's a life change. I had a couple life changes that happened to me. I, like, had three life changes that happened to me in 3 months, then the Rowan job. So I was like, wow, that's a lot. So, you know, there was that. And then, you know, the next 2 years, it was like we were in the NJAC tournament, in the final game or in the semi, and it's like we couldn't break through. And in 2018, we broke through. and, you know, it was recruiting, transfers, like the just the right team at the right time. And when we were going to the Final Four, we were undefeated. I'm like, I have a team that can win the national championship. You know, things don't go our way. Like, right, you always need a little bit of luck. Mm-hmm. But I definitely felt that pressure. And sometimes – and I thrive under pressure. But on a personal side, sometimes it when I go home, it would weigh on me. It would weigh – not and any probably any head coach will tell you this, sometimes unhealthy weight. But it was that important to me. And it mattered to me. Like, I believe being a head coach at a program like this – It's a lifestyle, right? There's you learn how to merge your personal and professional life if you want to be successful. And sometimes – and that's one of the things that I think I can do well, because it does bleed together, because some of my personal life, because of my professional life or my experience at Rowan, they're all intermingled, and that's why I'm here today. But, yeah, there is times – and I still feel that pressure. I feel that pressure today, but I can keep it at bay, and I don't let it consume me to where it's unhealthy.
You mentioned luck earlier, and this just as a competitor, is it hard to accept the impact that plain old luck has in winning and losing? Because you work so hard, and the game comes down to, well, the ball bounced over her stick. It hit an inseam, and you see it in every sport. Mm-hmm. But like I've always noticed over the years covering it that a lot of times coaches almost don't want to accept that luck plays as large a role it does, because it's not something they can control. And if it's outside of their control, it's evil. Just as a coach, is it hard to accept that you can do everything right and sometimes it's just not your day?
I can accept that. Like, in 21, we lost in the Final Four, and that Middlebury team was just better than us. Like, I can accept that. Like, at the beginning of the season, we lost to a team coming off, and we were terrible. And I was just like, all right, outlier. Like, you know, but when the things that we can control when we lose, that's the stuff that irritates me. And I, you know, whether – and listen, umpires are humans. They're going to miss calls. Like, they love the sport, and they're doing what's best for the sport as well. And, you know, as coaches, it can be frustrating because a call could make or break a goal and keep you out of the NCAA tournament. You know, my philosophy is don't put yourself in a position where the umpire can have a say on the outcome of the game. You know, but as far as that little luck or a little bounce that goes your way, I just – it's part of the game. I don't get so wrapped up in that. Like, you know, sometimes my kid is in the right line and the ball tipped off her stick and maybe the ball goes in unintentionally. She didn't mean, like, that stuff happens. Like, that stuff is just part of the game for me. I don't really get too worked up about, like, only if, but there's been times when they're like, oh man, I should have made this adjustment. I'll put that more on myself than, oh, I should have did that sooner. Or, you know what? I wish I would have done that, knowing what I – like, so I will do that more than I dwell on what transpired. It's more about my decision-making, or did I have them prepared? Like, I put that more on me than anybody else.
Ton of success at Rowan. You talk about just about every box, maybe except the national championship, has been checked. What are you most proud of?
Oh, I'm proud to be an alumni of Rowan. Like, I'm proud of the history and tradition that, you know, I feel like has been continued in our sport. I'm proud of the connections. I'm proud to be able to give my players an experience that, you know, they get to compete at a high level. They get a chance to win championships, but they also get to thrive and be themselves and be a good human. Like, they get to have growth, right? Like, so we're allowed to give them growth and the ability to be successful. But, you know, I am proud of what the team has done in the course of my time here. I'm proud of my staff. I'm proud of the players, like, and I'm proud of the connections that they have made across the board. You know, when they come, I see them when they come back to games, they're excited to be there. Their alumni are happy for the team's success. Like, they are genuinely, they want the team to do well. And whether I hear from them or don't, like, I know they're paying attention. There's always that piece for them that moment in time, and it's 4 years, so it's like a really minuscule part of your life, but it can be so impactful, like, and making the most of those moments and embracing them. So that's what I'm proud of. I'm proud of every team because every team has a unique journey, and if it wasn't for one team, each team year after year doesn't have success unless the team came before them.
Michelle Andre, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Rowan University head field hockey coach Michelle Andre for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Starting your own business can be intimidating. Suddenly, you're wearing all the hats. Designer, marketer, customer support, shipping expert. It's a lot. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the global commerce platform powering millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify has your back. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, you can launch a beautiful, professional online store that looks and feels like you. Need content? Shopify's AI tools can help you write product descriptions, headlines, even enhance your product photos. Want to grow your reach? Easily create email and social media campaigns to meet your audience wherever they're scrolling. And with Shopify's world-class support, you'll have expert help for everything. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.